Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Hey, it's Guy here. So there's been a lot of extreme weather making headlines this winter and spring. Where I live in California, we got hit with back-to-back-to-back-to-back endless atmospheric rivers, causing flooding, mudslides, record snowfall. Meanwhile, there were ice storms in Texas, tornadoes across the Midwest, and it's been so dry in Italy that some of the famous canals in Venice have begun to dry out. The United Nations has said that climate change is supercharging these types of extreme weather events, making them more common and more powerful. And so, in light of all these things happening, we thought it would be a good time to bring you my conversation from the spring of 2022 with Jan Wurzbacher, co-founder of Climeworks. Climeworks is a Swiss company that's building the world's largest direct air capture and storage facilities using technology that pulls carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and stores it permanently underground. It's an incredibly daunting challenge, but Jan is hopeful that his company can be part of a larger solution that might be able to help humanity combat climate change. All right, here's the show. Hello, and welcome to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. So most everyone has heard the grim predictions about climate change, that in order to keep our planet from warming more than 4 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of this century, we have to reduce carbon emissions by more than half, and we have to do that by 2050. But that's not all, and I'm not trying to depress you here, but it won't be enough to just cut our global carbon emissions in half. Just to keep our planet from getting unsustainably warm over the next 50 years, we also have to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So, to be clear, not only do we have to stop producing it, we also have to suck it out of the air. In fact, we have to suck a lot of it out of the air. The IPCC, the United Nations group that represents the scientific consensus on this stuff, says that by 2050, we need to remove 10 billion tons of carbon from Earth's atmosphere each year. This is a huge, monumental task. The good news is the technology to do this exists. It's pretty straightforward. Imagine a shipping container outfitted with a bunch of large fans. Each fan essentially sucks in air, filters that air, removes the carbon, blows out carbon-free air, and then injects the carbon into rocks about a mile deep underground. The bad news is, with our current technology, you need about 10 million of these shipping containers deployed all over the Earth to remove 10 billion tons of carbon a year. And the cost, at least right now, is so high that it makes this goal seem daunting. But a few enterprising entrepreneurs are actually undaunted. One of them is a German engineer named Jan Wurzbacher. Jan and Christoph Gebald co-founded a company called Climeworks, which has already built carbon capture facilities, including the biggest one on the planet in Iceland. They call it the Orca plant. Right now, the Orca facility only removes about 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. That's a drop in the bucket, but Jan believes this technology will scale very fast. In fact, he believes that within 30 years, the carbon capture industry will be among the biggest in the world. Jan Wurzbacher, welcome to the show.
Hey, Guy. Great to be here.
All right. So, Jan, first of all, tell me a little bit about your background. I know you studied to be a mechanical engineer, right? Initially, right?
That's right. That's correct. I actually came to Zurich back in 2003. Personally, I'm originally from Hamburg in Germany, but now almost 19 years ago, moved to Zurich. I wanted to study here at ETH Zurich, the main technical university. And well, that was thought to be for 3 years or 5 years at first. But then as it happened, really at the first day when you're introduced to the university, then we were organized in small groups of students to get a tour through the university. And I happened to be in the same group as Christoph was, and the two of us became friends very quickly, really, in the first days, and both had the dream of founding a company, and well, then it happened just 6 years later.
So the two of you, you and Christoph Gebald, went to study mechanical engineering at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology.
Yes.
In Zurich. And you both had the intention of maybe one day starting a business. Tell me what, at that time, what you thought you might want to do with your life.
Yeah, that's a good question. Probably we didn't have that many thoughts. It's rather this dream of building up something by your own. I mean, I was always interested in solving hard technical problems. That's mm-hmm. maybe one ingredient from my end. And on the other hand, when I was in school, I organized parties and I did some stuff here and there. And I always thought like doing something, building up something, that was always something I was intrigued by. And yeah. Christoph, pretty much the same. So it was really when we met and we asked each other, hey, what do you want to do one day? We didn't know about direct air capture or,
yeah.
of course, we knew about the climate topic and climate change, but it was not at a level of attention where it is today,
yeah.
back in those days. So we had really just this dream, hey, one day we found a company. And that was something that drove us through the studies somehow. So we always, like, if we were at a student party, we would high five and say, hey, we found a company one day, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, let's do it. And then, wow. yeah, then, so that was kind of the beginning.
All right, so you and Christoph are friends and in this mechanical engineering program. And how did you start to kind of learn about this idea of direct air capture, which we're going to talk about in a sec? But tell me how this idea even developed.
So it was not us who had this idea for the first time. There was actually a project at the Swiss Institute of Technology. It was a project at the Professorship of Renewable Energy Carriers by Professor Steinfeld. And he is a researcher who's been working for the past 20 years or more than that on solar fuels or solar materials. So he developed solar-driven reactors that could produce renewable hydrocarbons. So basically turn concentrated sunlight into something valuable. Mm-hmm. And he, like a couple of years before we started, he had this idea and he said, hey, if we want to do that at large scale, we need a closed cycle. So we need to take CO2 out of the air. We can then combine it with sunlight and water and make, say, renewable jet fuel out of that. Then the jet fuel is burned, the CO2 is emitted again to the atmosphere, and then you have to recapture it from the air. So you have to like turn it around in a cycle. That's what can be then really long-term sustainable. And then, so there was this idea, there was a project on that, totally different technology. And when we started, right. it was kind of the job of coming up with a different technology, which is more efficient, which is more scalable. So really when we started, it was like, I remember the first days after we had incorporated Climeworks, like the first thing I did is really sitting down with a blank sheet of paper and writing down pure numbers, like doing back of the envelope calculations, estimations. What can we do? What cannot we do? I can give you an example. Like to take a ton of CO2 out of ambient air, you need to filter around 2 million cubic meters of air.
Wow.
One out of 2,500 molecules in the air is CO2. Only one out of 2,500. So imagine, I don't know, you walk on the Broadway or whatever, and imagine you need to pass 2,500 people until you find one person that you're looking for. And then you continue walking, you need to pass another 2,500 people until you find one person. Mm-hmm. So that's literally what a CO2 capture system does. So you need to filter a lot of air to take like a significant tonnage of CO2 out of the air.
All right. We know that that there has to be a vast reduction in carbon emissions in order to mitigate the worst effects of climate change.
Right.
But it's not enough. I think most of us don't understand that it's not enough to just stop burning carbon, right? And I think the reduction, it has to be something like 45% reduction by 2030 alone.
Yes.
And on top of that, we also need to remove carbon from the atmosphere. Like I think the UN's report, the latest IPCC report says something like by the middle of this century, so 2050, we have to remove 6 to 10 billion tons of carbon dioxide from the air every year in addition to reducing emissions, which seems like a massive, enormous, daunting task. So let's understand what has to happen here on the carbon capture side. Basically, we need to have giant turbine engine fans all over the world just sucking in air and filtering out carbon?
Yeah, first of all, you're making exactly the right point, Guy. You said it, you said additionally, and that's a very important point. Like when we started Climeworks, many people asked us, hey, is that really what we need to do today? So why are you bothering capturing CO2 out of the air while there are still so many coal power plants and so many cars and planes driving and flying around and producing CO2? Should we not stop first all of these? And the answer to that is we could have asked that question maybe 2-3 decades ago,
yeah,
then we that this would still have been possible, but it's just too late. Like it's too late to ask that question. So the only chance of meeting the goals of the Paris Agreement is being bold on both ends. So again, the major portion has to come from reduction of emissions, from switching to renewables. But then to address these 10 billion tons of CO2 that need to be removed, we don't have a big portfolio of things to do. So you asked, what does that mean? Does that mean we have like huge giant turbines all over the world? Well, there are a few things we can do. We can, very simply speaking, plant trees. They take CO2 out of the air.
Right.
However, they have some issues attached to them. So first of all, it's good. We should plant as many trees as possible. And by the way, we should avoid burning down trees and deforesting trees in the first place and then plant more. But trees need a lot of area and they are not necessarily there forever. They might burn down, the land might degrade, they might not be growing for the next thousands of years. So that CO2 that is stored in trees is not necessarily bound for thousands of years. And very simply speaking, if we just do the calculation, what about capturing these 10 billion tons of CO2 from the air just by planting trees or doing similar biological methods, then you'll end up with huge areas that you need to fill with new trees. It's like you need something like the area of whole Europe or twice the area of India. And that's very likely not feasible. I mean, right now we are entering a food crisis, if we look what's happening on the world markets. So typically the area we have at our disposal for planting anything, we need it rather for food production. So that's then where technical solutions come in, like such as Climeworks, as we are doing. Mm-hmm. If you build machines like we are doing, you can do it on much, much less area. So you are about 1,000 times more area efficient. So at the same area where you can take 1 ton out of the air with trees, you could take 1,000 tons out of the air with machinery. So that's important. You need substantially less area. You need energy. So you need, for example, solar or wind or geothermal, like you would want to use typically renewable energy. So that's the thing. So you can scale technology-based solutions for direct air capture to a scale of 10 billion tons of CO2 from the air. That's possible. So we'll probably, it'll not be one technology, it'll be not one solution. We need a lot of things to do it, but technological or like scaling up such direct air capture or similar solutions will have to carry a major part of these 10 billion tons. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
Okay, so you decide that you are going to build a company around capturing and removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This is not a simple business proposition. You need a lot of money to do this kind of work. Just put aside the science part of it. Let's talk about the business part of it. I mean, once you sort of proved this concept out, how did you go about building and you know, getting financing to start to build these commercial scale direct air capture plant?
No, definitely. That was a big challenge, in particular given the fact that when we started 2009, 2010, 2011, what we were proposing was not generally accepted. Like people were even fighting us. There were professors writing articles saying you should not invest in direct air capture because it's a waste of resources. We should focus on getting our coal power plants off the grid, just to give an example.
Right.
Like the world was probably not ready to accept that it was too late just to stop burning coal.
Yeah.
And that is something that has fundamentally changed over the past, say, 5 years or so. But when we started, we weren't there yet. So you said, how did we start? We started actually looking for niche applications. So we did something totally different. Our first plant we built here in Switzerland, and that's still an operation, taking CO2 out of the air to then sell the CO2 to a greenhouse. They are fertilizing their plants with CO2, and also to Coca-Cola, who are making sparkling drinks with it.
So anyone who's got like a soda stream at home basically knows what a version of this is, because
exactly.
It's basically a cartridge of CO2 that you put in your soda stream to make bubbly water. So this is really interesting. I mean, so you were basically initially, just to kind of see if there was a market for this product, which is captured CO2, you're selling it to Coca-Cola, and presumably that is not sustainable. I mean, we're not drinking enough Coca-Cola or any carbonated beverage to account for all of the carbon in the atmosphere, right? It's not enough. It's just kind of an initial step to show that what you could do with this.
Exactly. Like, in terms of climate effects, that market is totally irrelevant. Like, is that a market? Could you grow a sustainable business on that? Yes, sure. So we could have decided just to become a small, medium-sized company developing direct air capture plants and building them around the world to supply beverage factories. That could have been an option, but that was not what we were interested in.
You would have had zero impact on the climate.
Exactly. Well, and just keep in mind, like, when you drink your Coke, right, the CO2 comes out again. So it's not a permanent storage of the CO2.
Right.
So those first plants, they were not meant to reduce the CO2 content of the atmosphere. It was just an initial market that we were tapping into to scale our technology.
I guess when you burp after you drink your Coca-Cola, it's going right back into the atmosphere.
That's exactly how it works.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Jan Wurzbacher and what he has built and what he's building with Climeworks and carbon capture technology. Stay with us. You're listening to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. Back in a moment. Hey, welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I am talking with Jan Wurzbacher. He's the co-founder and CEO of Climeworks, a company that is creating direct air carbon capture technology. Okay, let's talk about the technology now, sort of the kind of the next phase of this, which is it's somewhat different than you know, removing carbon and then selling it to Coca-Cola and the agricultural industry to use. It's about, like, injecting it deep underground and permanently storing it. Tell me how that works. How does it work?
So start with the first part, a Climeworks direct air capture plant. So we have our modular containers that we call CO2 collectors, and they contain a filter material.
Yep.
You can imagine that as kind of a sponge, like a sponge likes water and would suck up water.
Yep.
And this filter material is similar like a sponge. It has a high surface area. It is very porous. And it just reacts with CO2 when CO2 molecules pass by. So we have this filter inside the containers. And then in the first step of our filtering process, we just turn on the fans that are at the side of the filter box. We pull air through the filter. That takes about 1 to 2 hours, after which the material is full. It's saturated with CO2. Then we close the lids of these filter boxes. We heat them up to around 100 degrees Celsius, that's 200-something Fahrenheit. It's like boiling water temperature.
Right.
So we don't need high temperature. We don't need fancy stuff to do it. Just like heat it up a little bit. You can even do that with solar heat. And by that temperature increase, the CO2 is released again from the surface of the filter material. And you can turn on a pump that is then sucking out basically the pure concentrated CO2 from the filters. You can then hand it over to injection. That's what we do in Iceland with our partners from Carbfix. They have developed this method where they inject the CO2 in underground porous rocks, where the CO2 is mineralizing with the rocks. So within 2 years, the CO2 is just turned into stone there. And then on the other hand, our filter will just start again from the beginning. So we'll cool it down, expose it to the next portion of airflow. We'll capture more CO2. And then this can go on for years. After like a couple of years, you have to replace the filter then.
Wow. So you and your co-founder, Christoph, decide that it's not enough to just, you know, sell the CO2 to, you know, Coca-Cola. Tell me what the next step was. I mean, you, first of all, to build these plants on a large scale, even on a small scale, you need hundreds of millions of dollars, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's capital intensive. We are building hardware. We're putting tons of concrete and steel in the ground to start capturing CO2. And well, that's why we have just closed our financing round number 6 in the history of the company just in April 2022.
And what was the amount that you raised?
That was 650 million US.
Wow. And it's really, and because you have to build these massive facilities to just begin to suck in air, right?
Oh, that's right. And I mean, for us as a company, that's a large amount. That's much more funding than we had available before. The previous financing round, that was at around 100 million. But if you look at it from the other side, if you look at what this world needs to invest into corresponding infrastructure, into such types of technology, that's still a tiny sum, right? We need to invest, as you said, we need to invest billions, tens of billions, and hundreds of billions. And that's what we see on the horizon now. So governments start understanding what is needed. There are programs like the Department of Energy is starting to promote those type of technologies. They are creating funding programs to like increase the speed of scaling. Think of it as the very, very early phases of the solar PV and wind industries, where you had the first prototypes out there, and there also massive programs helped scaling that up. And that was a great success story, right? Yeah. Today, solar PV is the cheapest method on Earth to create electricity. How great is that? And it didn't take that long. And like the initial expectations on how this technology could first scale and second reduce costs, they were like outperformed massively. Like 10 years ago, you would have been called crazy if you had predicted a solar PV plant producing solar electricity at 5 cents per kilowatt hour. Today, they're doing it at 1 cent.
Yeah.
So that's massive. And that's the same what has to happen at our industry. And I'm sure that will happen over the next two decades to come.
All right, Jan, let's just talk for a moment about just the challenge of doing this, right? Because we're talking about 6 to 10 billion tons of carbon needs to be removed from the Earth's atmosphere every year by 2050. Right now, how much carbon is being removed from the Earth's atmosphere every year through this technology?
Well, right now, as we speak, Climeworks, we have the largest operating plant running. That's our Orca plant in Iceland. We're speaking of thousands of tons per year. So it's a small scale. So we need to thousandfold that to get to millions of tons. And like this industry is set up to scaling up to the million tons per year scale in the next couple of years towards the end of this decade. Okay. So that's what will happen. We are doing that. Like a handful of other companies are working towards that. So that's happening. Then the next question is, how can we scale up from millions of tons to billions of tons? If you look at what other industries have done, again, referring to solar PV or the wind industry, they did something like 10x every 10 years. If we can do the same, maybe we can do twice as fast as them, then it is feasible that we can scale to the billions of tons per year scale by mid of the century, so by 2050. Really? And that's where we need to go. So other industries have shown that you can do that. It's not impossible. And also in terms of size, maybe let me give you one example, just that you have like something to imagine in terms of what does it mean in terms of equipment that you need to put around to put on Earth. Our plants are built out of modular systems. Yep. We call them CO2 collectors, and then one CO2 collector has the form of a 40-foot shipping container. So how many containers would you need to take 1% out of global emissions? So the climate science tells us by mid of this century, we need to take 10-20% out of the emissions out of the air. So let's take 1% of that. And you would need something like 750,000 containers for that, which, is that a large number? It's actually not a large number.
Right.
It's actually what goes through Shanghai port in 2 weeks, right? It's not a lot compared to global economy.
Right.
And that's 1%, and then you can tenfold it, then you have 10%, and then you're nearly there.
Okay, but let me ask you about this, because, and again, I am rooting for you. We all are. We want this to work. But I mean, I'm imagining like we need to be like covering the deserts of the Western United States. Like we need these containers deployed in a massive scaled way, like now.
As soon as possible, that's right. In terms of the area that we need to cover, it's not that bad. If you think of all the area that is covered for open pit mining of lignin or coal, that's even much worse. So, I mean, energy infrastructure is large in any case. So that infrastructure will also be large, but not larger than other infrastructure. So in terms of speed of scaling, in terms of required financing, in terms of required area, and in terms of industry output of the world. That those are all numbers where you can show it's feasible to scale up. But it's big. It's a big job we have to do. It's a certain portion of the global economy output that needs to go in there. But it's just like in the end, like, you know, what we are talking is the creation of a new industry of the size of today's oil and gas industry. That's basically it.
You chose such a complex business to get involved with, and I commend you for that, because there's just challenge after challenge. So we're talking about like the challenge of scale, the challenge of financing that scale. But there's the other challenge that we haven't talked about, which is right now, with few exceptions, it's very energy intensive to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. You need energy to remove it. And so right now, in order to make this sustainable, you'd have to use renewable energy. Like, you, in addition to putting these modular shipping containers full of turbine fans all over the world, you need to deploy like wind and solar farms next to them to power them.
Totally right. It's at the same time an energy challenge. The good news is there is way enough energy arriving on this planet every minute from the sun in terms of solar energy, wind energy. So in terms of availability of renewable energy capacity, that's like not an issue at all. But it's like when you think of building up this infrastructure, you really need to do both. So you need to build the direct air capture plants, and at the same time, you need to build out renewable energy producing capacity, which on the other hand, however, can also be a good thing if you build direct air capture plants, let's say, in regions where there is not a good electricity supply, no good electricity grids. There can be good synergies, right? You can support local communities by the same solar PV fields and wind farms that are built up to deploy direct air capture. But you need to do both.
Yeah.
The good thing is, since we're doing direct air capture, we are very flexible in terms of location. So air is everywhere. So we have our CO2 source everywhere. We are really looking to where is the best place to source sufficient renewable energy. And then the second question is, where can we store the CO2? Fortunately, there are many, many regions around the world where you can do safe and permanent CO2 storage in saline aquifers, in basalt rock, as we do it in Iceland, which is the best way to do it because the CO2 is just mineralized and turned into stone. So that's a great way to do it. But there are many other ways. So we are basically, what we're doing is mapping the world for renewable energy potential and storage potential. And where the two intersect, those are the sweet spots for large-scale deployment of direct air capture.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more from Jan Wurzbacher, co-founder of Climeworks. Stick around. You're listening to How I Built This Lab. Hey, welcome back to How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. I'm talking with Jan Wurzbacher. He's the co-founder and CEO of Climeworks. It's a company that's working to develop and deploy carbon capture technology. All right, so you built, and I think it debuted just recently in last year, a plant in Iceland called Orca. And presumably you built it in Iceland because Iceland is basically geothermally powered. I mean, most of their energy comes from geothermal power. And so I'm assuming that this plant in Iceland doesn't require, you know, fossil fuels.
That's right. So that's really, Iceland is the sweet spot of starting to do what we're doing. You have geothermal heat and electricity to power our plant. And we do have the developed storage sites and storage reservoirs where we can inject the CO2 underground where it is then mineralized. It's really those two factors.
So this facility in Iceland, how many containers does it have?
That one has 8 containers. So that ends up then with a total nominal capacity of 4,000 tons of CO2 per year that can be captured.
And it's exciting, but really it's designed to prove the concept, to show what is possible.
It's both. For us, it's exactly to prove the concept. Of course, we learn a lot from that. Like, based on that, we are now building a 10 times larger plant. We take, of course, all the learnings. But at the same time, it's also the first commercial plant. So we are providing CO2 removal services with that plant to our corporate and private customers as well.
All right, explain this, because I'm assuming it's like basically companies that are paying you to offset their carbon emissions. It's like when you buy a plane ticket, you have the option to, you know, spend some money to offset your emissions, and they might plant some trees or something. Is that essentially the same principle happening on a larger scale? Because I know there are big companies like Microsoft and Audi and Shopify, and that are they essentially saying, look, we want to do our part. We're going to pay you X number of dollars in order to offset our emissions.
Yes, that's very similar. So it's really the pioneering ones among the large corporates who have come up with very ambitious, like either net zero or even net negative goals of becoming carbon neutral or carbon negative. And those companies who are our customers are typically the ones who have had a very sophisticated look at the market and looked at what is available. And like Microsoft has done a great deal of work there, and they employed a bunch of scientists who looked at the different ways, and they turn out with the understanding that what we are doing at Climeworks is really what they believe is ultimately scalable. And that's why they are using our service. As you said, they pay us to remove a certain amount of tonnage of CO2 from the atmosphere and then put it underground for them in a really, really long-term permanent way, right? So it's fully additional. So it's not some certificates from some project that might have happened anyway. So it's additional. It's permanent and it's safe. And those are the attributes that are so important to them.
Well, here's what I'm trying to understand, because what do they get out of it aside from doing their part for the planet, which they should? But really, what do they get out of it? I mean, aside from being able to say, hey, look, we're actually doing this voluntarily, because there's no requirement. They don't have to do it.
Well, not yet, first of all. So they are all anticipating that things will come up, and they are already showing up on the horizon. But on top of that, it can be a very vital element of their business for a simple fact, because their customers and their stakeholders might just ask them to do it. So those companies who are currently our customers, they know that if they can provide CO2 neutral or CO2 negative products to their customers, and in particular achieved with a technology that is really bulletproof, such as we are providing, that has like hard economic benefits on their business model. And then we spoke about corporates a lot. Important is that we are also serving just private individuals. So when we started this actually in 2016-17, like a lot of people asked us, hey, like, it's cool what you're doing at Climeworks. You're taking CO2 out of the air. What can we do to help? And that's then when we decided, like, after being an engineering company, a hardware company for many years, which we still are, for the first time we introduced a digital business model and we opened a web shop which is active today. So everyone like you and I, we could go to climeworks.com and have our personal subscription to remove a certain amount of CO2 from the atmosphere every month with our plans. And that's been quite successful. So we've had, since beginning, over 14,000 customers. That's increasing. And that's really, for us, that's a good thing. Like the fact that so many individuals are into that then drives also more corporate actions.
Right. I mean, I understand why some people would be motivated to do that, because they are good global citizens. But the reality is humans are motivated by different things, and generally not by being virtuous. I mean, look, you and I may try and live as virtuously as possible. I drive an electric car. I bike most of the time. I buy food from a farmer's market. But I know at the end of the day, simply by living in a home in a developed country and even minimizing my electricity and water usage, my global carbon footprint is much higher than somebody in India or somebody in China, right? And so what would motivate somebody on their own to just send you money every month to remove carbon on their behalf? Like, what do they get out of it aside from feeling good?
Yeah, well, you know, we also have to think what we need during this first phase, during this decade we're currently living in. So what they get out of it is, well, for themselves, they have taken care of their carbon balance, but they have also enabled a new industry. And that is, I think, what is most intriguing. It's like, I'm fully with you, like 95% of the population would likely only do this when they are forced to it. And that's eventually, to get to billions of tons of CO2 removal, we need regulation, we need corresponding legislation, we need governmental procurement programs that might be CO2 taxes or CO2 burdens or incentives that we need for the masses, right? And for really removing billions of tons of CO2 from the air. But that's not what we need now. Like, for the next 10 years, Climeworks and the other companies around us, this whole industry, they need a couple of billion, or let's say 10 or 20 of billions. And that's a relatively small amount. So like those pioneering customers on the private and on the corporate side, they are really enabling us to do the next scale-up step and to get to the next level. Once we are there,
right.
we need more than that. That is clear. But it's really what they are getting out of it is being a pioneer and enabling a new industry, which I think is a pretty cool thing.
So essentially, you are setting yourself up for a future where most governments around the world will require their citizens and their businesses to pay some kind of tax to offset their emissions. And in order to do that, they're going to have to use the technology that you are developing. If you're a leader in this industry in 10 years, then it could be a very profitable business.
That's definitely the case. As you said it in the very beginning, we do have to be a profitable business in order to become climate relevant. There's no other way. So it's not charity what we're doing. We have to become a business. That's the only way how we can change the world for better.
It's a huge, huge undertaking. I mean, the work that you have put into this over the last 13 years, you have this amazing facility in Iceland, but still just 4,000 tons a year. I mean, I shouldn't say it that way because it's an incredible achievement, but man, it just feels so daunting and overwhelming. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, you know, we've been doing this for almost 13 years now, and I think Christoph and I have just always been running and running, and it's a marathon we are on. Maybe we are at kilometer five or kilometer 10, but it's a bit like, you know, when you're starting a marathon, you shouldn't think of kilometer 40 when you're at kilometer five, but you should rather like make sure that you save your forces for the next five and the next five and the next five kilometers. That's a bit what it is. And look at where we're coming from. We started with capturing milligrams of CO2 from the air in our laboratory reactors. Then we went from milligrams to grams, from grams to kilograms, from kilograms to tons, from tons to 1,000 tons. So we did quite a few scale-up steps already. So there are a few left. Of course, those are the largest ones then. But we need something to do for the next 10 to 15 years, right?
It's like a marathon, but it's also like a sprint. It's also like the 100-meter dash because time is running out.
Sometimes it does feel like a sprint indeed. That's right. But yeah, you know, on the other hand, don't forget that people typically underestimate what technology scale-ups can do. I always say like, well, there are many solutions how we can approach this challenge. But if we look at where humans are really good in is massively scaling up technology. So if we can make it developing and implementing and scaling good technology, we can be fast. We can be fast. There's a saying, I think Bill Gates said that once, like you typically overestimate what you can achieve in 1 year, but you typically underestimate what you can achieve in 10 years. And that's a bit the philosophy we are following. And that's how we're racing.
Jan, do you think we humans can reverse climate change? Do you think we have the capacity to be able to do that within your and my lifetime?
I'm convinced that we can, yes.
You're convinced we can?
Yes. Between us and achieving that, there are just humans in between. Technology and physics can do it. It's very easy. You can show it. We just have to do it.
Amazing. Amazing. Jan Wurzbacher, thanks so much.
Thank you, Guy.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to How I Built This Lab. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you always have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our account is @HowIBuiltThis and mine is @GuyRaz. And on Instagram, I'm @Guy.Raz. If you want to contact the team, our email address is hibt@id.wondery.com. This episode was produced by Chris Messini with editing by John Isabella. Our audio engineer was Maggie Luthar. Our music was composed by Ramtin Arablouei. Our production team at How I Built This includes Alex Chung, Carla Estevez, Casey Herman, JC Howard, Liz Metzger, Sam Paulson, Carrie Thompson, Catherine Seifer, Josh Lash, and Elaine Coates. Neva Grant is our supervising editor. Beth Donovan is our executive producer. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to How I Built This. If you like How I Built This, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.